So first of all, thank you so much, and really thank Leora for hosting this year. This is the first of two from Yeshiva University, Torah Mitzion, Beit Midrash Zichron Dov, my shiur tonight, and then Rabbi Ziering next week. I was stalling trying to remember the title of his shiur, but I'm blanking. Do you remember what he's speaking?
Website Commerce.
Right, Website Commerce on Shabbos. That will be his next week. Both for his shiur and for my shiur tonight, practical halachic questions have to go to your usual posek. I'm going to be discussing issues which have practical ramifications, but I'm a very big believer in the idea that whoever paskins should be somebody who's responsible to a community and not just somebody who is just having fun by answering questions and causing trouble. So with that in mind, I want to look at this issue from a few different perspectives. First, I'm going to want to lay out the basics of the issue of resorting to secular courts, just the basics of the Gemara, the Yis or the Prohibition, as well as some of the logic behind it, three different approaches to why we take such a harsh stance against going to secular court. Talk a little bit about the history and how this actually changed over time, and why this was why something that the Rashba said actually turns out to be quite prophetic. And then to ask the big question, which is, so what if you're stuck? What if I have some kind of a din Torah with another Jew? There's some kind of an issue. The only thing is, I'm willing to go to the Beis Din. He's not willing to go to the Beis Din. Am I now stuck, or am I allowed to go to the secular court? And if so, what are the terms? Under what circumstances am I allowed to take this up in secular court? There are all sorts of nuances to it. I'll try to get into some of the nuances, but I want to make sure to cover all three of those bases. What's the issue in the first place? The history of it? And so how do we get around it when we need to get around it? Clear? Okay. As always, don't wait till the end for questions, because, there is no such thing. You have to insert yourself in the middle. So we begin with the Gemara in Gittin, which is the classic source. Rabbi Tarfon's statement, Hi, Rabbi Tarfon, Omer, Rabbi Tarfon used to say, Kol makom shatamotze agoriyos shalotei kochavim. Wherever you find the courts of idolaters, agoriyos is not a Hebrew word, it's from the Greek, but wherever you find the gatherings of the idolaters for the sake of judging cases, aval pisha dineim kidine Yisrael, even if their laws match our laws, you're not allowed to go to their courts. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, "Ve'ela hamishpatim asher tasim lifneihem." These are the mishpatim you shall put before them. Literally, that means these are the laws you shall place before them, before the Jews. But I don't think it actually means laws in context here. I think they're taking mishpat here to mean these are the judgments you shall place before them. And it says, Lifnehem, below Lifnei Ovdei Kochavim, is supposed to go to Jews. It's not supposed to go to idolaters. There's plenty of room. So your mishpat, your judgment, is not supposed to go to the courts of the non-Jews. Your judgment should take place in a Beis Din. That's the Gemara statement, and it's brought as halacha by the Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin in source number 2, where the Rambam writes, Kol adon bedinei akum uverkos shalohen. If you go to non-Jewish courts, and every time you see the word idolatrous here, you should recognize it doesn't mean idolatrous. It doesn't mean specifically if they worship idols. It means non-Jewish courts in general. Although you will find in later literature, some of which we may get to, that they'll say, well, the courts in our day are different, and they very earnestly will write in the preface of their books, none of what I'm saying applies to the non-Jewish courts in our day, because they're wonderful people with great laws and so on and so forth. Those tended to be disclaimers for the sake of the censor, the equivalent of writing in the front of your book, don't burn this book. But in practice, what we're saying applies not only to courts of idolaters, but it applies to courts that are not Jewish courts in general, and we're going to have to define what is a non-Jewish court. What if it's a secular civil court, but the judges are Jewish? Now what? What if it's a Jewish court, but they don't go by the laws of the Torah, right? What if it's a court in Israel? So we have to talk about defining Jewish court, non-Jewish court, but know that the word idolater is non-specific here. So one who litigates before idolatrous judges and in their courts is a Rasha, he says. Even though dinam k'dinei Yisrael uki'ilu chirev v'gidev, it is as though he has blasphemed v'heirim yad b'taras Moshe Rabbeinu, he has raised a hand against the Torah of Moshe our master, Shenamar, and he quotes the pasuk which we're already familiar with from source number 1, ve'elam mishpatim.
Okay,
yes.
Kol hadan is
It doesn't mean the judge, right?
Correct. No, it means to litigate in their courts. You're right. Kol Hadan sounds like it means to be a judge in a secular court, but it's not. It's understood to mean somebody who enters into litigation. Good catch, then. The Rambam then continues to say, "Haisa yad ha'akum takifa ubal dino ilim." So what happens if the hand of the akum, the hand of the non-Jews, is strong, and your opposing litigant is a powerful guy? And you can't get him to go to Beis Din. So first, try to bring him to a Jewish court. And if he doesn't want to come, no tell Rishus mi Beis Din umatzel b'dinei akum miyad ba'al dino. If he doesn't want to come to Beis Din, so what do? You get permission from the Beis Din to pursue him in the non-Jewish court, and you get your property from him in the non-Jewish court. So the Rambam already recognizes that there's an out. You're not always going to be stuck. There is a possibility of saying, I can't get him to go to the Jewish court, can't get him to go to Beis Din, I'm going to pursue him in the non-Jewish court. So we have to talk about that. But the basic issur, the basic prohibition is, don't pursue him in non-Jewish courts. You're supposed to take him to Beis Din. Straightforward?
Are we talking about litigation with another Jew?
Yes. All of this discussion is going to be about litigation with a Jew. There is discussion, of course, halachically, about litigation with a non-Jew. And there are some who say you should try to take him to a Beis Din first. Nonetheless, it's very clear across the board that if he's not interested in going to Beis Din, you have no imperative of saying, well, you know, that's it, Beis Din or bust. Everybody agrees that you can take him to their courts. So this even includes where you stipulate in your agreement that the parties are going to go to secular court. We have a general rule, masna mashakasu b'Torah, that one is allowed to make conditions on financial matters, not to explicitly reject a law of the Torah. So I can't lend somebody money with a condition of, we're going to have ribbis here. The Torah says we don't like interest, nonetheless, in our deal we're going to have ribbis. No, that doesn't work. However, you are able to structure your agreements to get around various financial terms. So, for example, a husband and a wife, when they get married, are allowed to make a condition in which the husband or the wife forgoes certain financial rights. That's allowed. However, you can't have an agreement to enter into a business deal with somebody and say, and in the event that there's a dispute, we're going to go to secular court. That is not recognized halachically. That doesn't work. And Ramban writes it in source number 3. He says, "V'aval pishe iskiru chachamim shtei akitos ha'ela ke'achas." He says, he's commenting on a pasuk there, and having commented on the note regarding the fact that you can't have Jewish judges who are unlearned, who are ignorant, and you can't have non-Jewish judges. And he says the Chachamim list both disqualifications together to say, I can't have people who aren't educated, and I can't have non-Jews as my judges. Nonetheless, yesh hefresh b'neihem. There actually is a distinction between the two groups. Sheim ratzu shnei bali dinin lavo lifnei ahedjo shebi Yisrael mutarhu. Because if both litigants say, if both Jews say, we want to go to somebody, and he'll be our judge, he'll be our arbitrator, even though he doesn't know what he's talking about, that works. You could be mekabel whoever you want within the Jewish people as your judge. That's okay. They don't have to be educated. They don't have to be qualified. Nothing. However, avo lefnei agoyim, but as far as non-Jews, asurin hein lavo lefanav, you're not allowed to go to him in court. Sheyidom lehem bedineihem la'olam, to go by their laws. That's never allowed. So says the Ramban, and it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat Chavav Aleph. In general, Choshen Mishpat Chavav is where the Shulchan Aruch discusses the issue of handling cases in non-Jewish court. So that's the rule.
Versed in Jewish law.
Right. So what if the judge actually knows halacha? So that takes us all the way back to the Gemara in source number 1, right, where Rabbi Tarfon says, Ava pisha dineim k'dinei Yisrael, even if his law, his verdict, is going to be just like ours. And not just because the judge happens to have learned it, but even if their laws match ours. Their code of law actually says, kafel for a thief, or whatever it is, doesn't make a difference. I'm still not allowed. And that really brings us to the big question, which is, why? What if their verdict is going to be the same as our verdict, and they're fine, upstanding people, and they're going to have witnesses, and they're going to require the same thing of witnesses? It just happens to be that it's the court of North York or whatever it is, instead of the Beis Din. You know, they can put out potato kugel in court. Like, what's the big deal? Why are we so against this? Yeah.
If the concern is the bottom line.
Yeah.
Then it's a question. If the concern is Eichel Hashem,
So
going to their courts instead of ours, then.
Right. So one possible argument is that it's an issue of Chil Hashem by saying I'm not going with the Jewish base, then I'm going to go to secular court. Before I get to the Chil Hashem, though, I want to make the question sharper. Yeah, we have a rule that says Dina Demalchus Adina, right? The law of the land or the law of the kingdom is the law. And there are lots of nuances to Dina Demalchus Adina. Where does it apply? Where doesn't it apply? What if it's a law that's to benefit society? What if it's a law that's to benefit the governor specifically? What if it's a law that's not applied evenly across the land? All sorts of different nuances within it. But why is Dina Demalchus binding? What's the rationale? Why is it that the law of the empire is the law?
Because otherwise you should do criminal law.
So one argument is it's for the good of society, because if everybody can ignore the laws, then it will create chaos. Another argument is, the classic argument is, the government owns the land. And it's their football. And if you don't like their rules, then don't play. But if you want to play, you have to play by their rules. Another answer is it's social contract. Right? We all have gotten together and agreed that this is going to be our government and these are going to be our rules. But one of the beautiful arguments on behalf of Dina Demalchus Adina that I really happen to like, I'm very partial to this argument, I think it's the Chasam Sofer who says it, is there are seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach. There are like 13, but we call them seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach anyway. The Gemara tries to figure out how you end up with seven. But one of the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach is dinin. That they're obligated to set up a judicial system. So how in the world can you say that they have an obligation to set up a judicial system and then flout their laws and flout their courts? Right? That's one of the arguments for Dina Demalchus, says you have to follow their laws because you told them to make laws. God told them to make laws. He stands behind their laws. So therefore, Dina Demalchus, Dina. But extending that, if they're supposed to have courts, right? According to, who is it, the Ramban who says that, is it the Rambam or the Ramban who says by Shimon and Levi and Dina, right, that the city of Shechem is liable for death because they don't set up courts. So now they're going to set up courts, and we're not going to go. What are you talking about? How can you not go to their courts? How could you not? That's Dina Demalchus. It's very difficult. I brought you this source in source 4, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that understands that there's a mitzvah of having civil law from the word Vayitzav and Hashem's instruction to Adam. I brought you Dina Demalchus Adina in source number 5. So yeah, and the Rashba for his part says no, this isn't under Dina Demalchus Adina, but why? So there are three ideas. One idea is the idea you just said, which is that it's an issue of Chilul Hashem. Rashi, in the beginning of Parashas Mishpatim, says it in source number 6, Al tivi ehu be'erkos shalahem. Don't bring it to their courts. Erkos is a term that the Gemara uses repeatedly for the courts of non-Jews. Sha'mevi dina Yisrael lefnei goyim. Because if you bring our litigation in front of them, mechalel es Hashem, you desecrate Hashem's name, umiyakir shem avodah zara lahachshiva, and you honor the idol. Because you say, that is better to me than Beis Din. Although, even though Rashi uses the term avodah zara, nonetheless, halachic authorities on this say it applies to secular courts as well. But that's the first argument. Second argument, beyond chilul Hashem, is a fascinating argument from the Rashba, which carries through historically. And this is essentially a patriotic argument. If you follow their courts, you run the risk of destroying ours. Our system is going to atrophy. Right? If everybody brings their litigation into the secular court system, so Beis Din becomes something, a bunch of rabbis sitting around discussing theoretical applications above Mitzia? The answer is yes. That's what you'll end up with. Take a look at the Rashba in source number 7. Sorry?
It becomes a Shiva.
It becomes a Shiva, precisely.
That's not good enough to not do that.
Okay. No. But what he's saying is, just saying so it'll actually, okay, so maybe that's better for everybody. You know, evolution, survival of the fittest. If they're not, you know, able to win, that's the way it goes. But take a look at the Rashba in source number 7, because he's really impassioned about this. He says, "Lilmod mizeh leilech bederach." Lilmod mizeh. The zeh is dina demachlus adina. He says to learn from this idea that you follow whatever the government legislates. To say leilech bederachei agoyim u'mishpetehem chas v'shalom la'am kadosh lino kacha. He says, God forbid that the holy nation should do that. And he points out something that's specific to the case that's in front of him. He says, if you're now going to increase what you're doing here, increase the avera, the relying on this fragile reed to do it, someone who does this knocks down the walls of the Torah, he uproots the root and the branch, and the Torah will demand its shame from him, and somebody who increases his wealth with this, somebody who's actually going to make money by doing this is going to stumble because of his deeds. And he says, I hate to tell you this, but if you rely on that, that makes you into a thief. Which is a point that's not just the Rashba who says, the Tashbates and others said, if I win in secular court and I draw money out of a Jew by secular court, then I'm a thief because I've taken it inappropriately. Whether that's really true or not is actually unclear because the other guy agreed to go to the court there. He accepted whatever the verdict was. So whether you're going to really define it as theft or not is an interesting question in its own right. But he continues to say, "Uvichlal oker kol dinei haTorah hashlema." He says, you know what you're doing? You're uprooting all of the laws of our perfect Torah. He says, what do we need with all those holy books that they compiled for us? What do I need with half a Shas? Everything that deals with litigation, Yilamdas b'neim dinei agoyim, let them teach their kids the laws of the nations. V'yimnu lehem bamos tuluos b'beis midrasei hagoyim, and he says, let them build for themselves. Excuse me. Patchwork altars in the madrasas of the nations. This is an intentional play on words. What the Rashba is doing here. The bamos tuluos comes from Yechezkel. Talking about Avodah Zarah, Yechezkel Perek Vav. And I assume what he's doing here with the madrasa is a play on the Muslims. The Rashba is in Muslim Spain. Rabbi Shlomo Ibn Aderet. So I assume madrasa is on purpose. He doesn't say Beit Midrashay Hagoyim. He says, Chalila lotia kazos bi Yisrael chas v'shalom shemetachgor ha-Torah aleha. Saki says, this will be a desecration that should never be. And he goes on and on and on. He's very exercised by this. And that's the second argument, is that you run the risk of destroying our Torah. No one's going to learn Nezikin in any serious way. I'm going to come back to this point because of the history of it. It's just fascinating what happened actually in this regard in Ashkenaz versus in Sfar, depending on where people went to Beis Din and where they did not. So we're going to come back to that in a bit. But but that's the second argument. It's essentially an argument of what's going to happen to our Torah, what's going to happen to the Jewish people. And then there's a third argument, which I haven't seen others stress, but I think is absolutely a part of this, which is we don't look at din as simple litigation.
It's a religious experience.
It's a religious experience.
You don't go to their shuls, so why should you go to their din?
Right. Din is, it's an opportunity to build up the world in the image designed by the Torah. It's a religious responsibility. Litigation is as religious an act as going to mikvah.
Look where they put the Sanhedrin.
Exactly. That's one of the pieces that I would bring to support it. The fact that the Sanhedrin sits in the Lishkas Hagazis, as well as the Gemara Brachos that says Elokim Nitzav, right? God is standing there, Badas Kale, right? We understand that to mean where the Beis Din is. Bekarav Elohim Yishpot. Elohim, there's a reference to judges, but Hashem is with the judges when they judge. Not only that, I brought you the Gemara in Shabbos in source number 8, called Dayan Shedan Din Emes La'amito, a judge who judges truthfully, Afilu Shah Achas, even for a moment, Mala Olav Akasov Kiluna Seshutov Lakarish Baruch Hu B'maase Bereshis, the Pasuk considers him to be, it isn't clear, the Gemara doesn't say what Pasuk it is, but some Pasuk considers him to be a partner with Hashem, in creating the world. And then you have another Gemara in Sanhedrin, source number 9, called Dayan Shadan Din Emes La'amito. Mashra Shechina b'Yisrael. He causes the Shechina to be manifest among us. And there I think it's Bekerev Elokim Yishpot. The Chodayin She'eno Don Din Emes Lamito Gorm L'Shechina Shetistalek b'Yisrael. And if you don't judge honestly, then you cause the Shechina to leave Israel. That's also why we go straight from the giving of the Torah into Ve'ela HaMishpatim Asher Tassim Lifnehem. We go right from giving the Torah at Sinai right into, and here are the Mishpatim. Here is how you're gonna handle your cases. And the Nevi'im, when you look at the Nevi'im towards the end of the first Beis HaMikdash, right? The especially when you get into Treyasar, but even Yeshaya Yirmiyah, but then you move into Treyasar and you look at Amos and Nevi'im like that. What are their big complaints about regarding the Jewish people? What is the Musar that they give?
You know, judging there was a man fairly. Mm-hmm.
They only really talk about Tzedek u'Mishpat and Avodah Zarah. That's it. That's really what they're interested in. You don't find Musar for you're not keeping kosher. You don't find Musar for you're not checking Shabbos. You don't find Musar for any number of things. It's not because we were perfect in every way. We just had the weakness for Avodah Zarah and, you know, abusing other people. But they picked on those elements and Mishpat over and over again. You learn Yeshaya, the beginning of Yeshaya. It's a constant refrain. We say it, you know, or until this year anyway, we said it for the Haftorah for Shabbos Chazon before Tisha B'Av. Tzion b'Mishpat Tipada and Tzedek Yolin Bava Tamar Atzchim and so on. But it's all through the first five prakim in Yeshaya. It's all about the importance of justice, and the Navi is concerned about it alongside Avodah Zarah, alongside idolatry. So really you have three different reasons, to my mind, behind the emphasis on going to a Jewish court as opposed to going to a secular one. Chil Hashem, the divine honor, patriotism, and the issue of what's going to happen to our court system. And third, this religious factor of this is a religious act. You can't just outsource it and just say, well, I'm getting rid of that and now it's just litigation. That's it. I'm no longer going to mikvah, now I'm just going to take a bath. That's essentially what you've done if you go to a secular
not community the based in was corrupt.
Yes. So you get into the next round of questions has to be, so there are certain factors that will depend on which reason is your real reason. One argument is that if the secular court is actually not a secular court in the sense of completely separate from us, but it's Jewish judges, right? What if it's a court in Israel? Maybe there isn't the same Chilul Hashem component to it. You're not going to Avodah Zarah. You're not going outside of the fold. So that's one nafkamina. Another would be, what if I can't get a proper Beis Din? What if that's not an option for me? Whether it's because I believe they're corrupt or whether it's because I live in Toledo in the 13th century and there are no trained judges there, as we're going to see.
Toledo, Ohio.
Actually, they're probably there also. You couldn't, but no, I was thinking Spain. And there are no trained judges. So if you're going to tell me that the rationale is if you follow their dinim, you run the risk of destroying ours. That ship has sailed. We don't have a proper Beis Din anyway. But on the other hand, if the issue is that it's a matter of divine honor, there's still the matter of, what am I going to do? I'm going to go to the Muslim court in Toledo, Spain. Toledo, Ohio doesn't have Sharia law. But that's it matters. Which reason you choose is actually going to affect the way this plays out. I mentioned a couple of times the issue of what if it's an Israeli system. It's an Israeli court. Jewish judges. Some of the laws are even built on the principles of what they call Mishpat Ivri, of Jewish law. So then what do you do? So the Chazon Ish was adamant that it's bad. And not only bad, but it's worse. Because he's the Chazon Ish. If you take a look at source number 10, the Chazon Ish writes, the Av Agav Deleka Beinehem Dayon Sheyadin Alpi Mishpatei HaTorah Umuchrachim Lehimanos Bal Seichel Afi Musarei HaAdam. He says, even where you don't have a good judge, you don't have a proper, properly trained Beis Din who's going to use Torah law, and therefore your alternative is to choose someone who's a sharp guy And he's going to judge based on just, you know, what appears to him to be right. Musari ha'adam, human ethics. Einam rashoim lekabel aleim chukei amim o lechokek chukim. They're not allowed to accept for themselves the laws of the nations or to establish a system of law, meaning an alternative system of law. Shashofet kol din shelefanav hanira elav zel bechlal pshara. Because somebody who just says, you know what, I'm going to offer you what my gut says. So you'll tell me your position, you'll tell me your position. I'm not promising to give you the Torah's law. I'm telling you what seems right to me. So that's called pshara, that's called compromise. Mediation, arbitration, depending on how you structure it, what steps you take. But he says, "Ve'ei nikar adavar sha'azvu makor mayim chayim lachtov boroz nishbarim." Uses the language of the Navi. He says, there it's not obvious that they have abandoned the source of living water to go dig these broken cisterns. Avolem yaskimu al chukim. But once they say, we're setting up an alternative system of justice, we're setting up another system of law, and that's the way we're going to litigate. He says, that's degrading the Torah. And he brings you the pasuk, asher tasim lefneihem v'lo lefnei hetyotos. Chazanish was adamant, you can't set up another system of law as an alternative to Torah law. Justice Menachem Elon, who I'm about to quote a lot of, so let me mention a little bit about him. He grew up in Dusseldorf, Germany, till the age of 12. His family then, it was 1935, his family left Germany. He came to Israel, learned in Yeshivat Hebron for quite a few years. He had smicha from Rav Ben Zion Uziel and Rav Herzog. I don't know all the stuff about him by chance, but every week in Toronto Torah we do a biography and a translation of someone's Torah. And this week, because I was giving the shiur, I do it a piece from him, so I have his bio in my head. But in any case, he learned in Hebron for quite a few years. He became a lawyer, and then he worked his way up in the system, and he ended up being the vice president of Israel's Supreme Court for quite a few years. And he wrote what is by most assessments one of the best, if not the best, modern work on the development of Beis Din and all the halachos of Choshen Mishpat and so on. It's called HaMishpat HaEvri. It's almost 2,000 pages, four volumes, and it is just fantastic. I mean, you can't read it like straight through cover to cover, you go out of your mind. But if it's a topic you're interested in, you know, you can plow through his couple hundred pages on whatever topic you like, and it's just outstanding. There is an English edition. I don't know if they translated everything or if they just translated parts, but I know that an English edition exists. So he was absolutely brilliant. And his son, one of his sons, just passed away, Benny Elon, passed away last week, if you're familiar with him. But Menachem Elon was adamant that Israeli courts, even if they're not governed by halacha, are not under this. He didn't like it. He actually wanted them to adopt more of halacha as a basis for the way that they run the court system. Did not win that battle. But he said, I'll prove it to you from the Shulchan Aruch. He said, look, the Shulchan Aruch has, I mentioned to you before, Choshen Mishpat Chavav. That's the siman where it discusses going to non-Jewish courts. It has a separate siman, siman Ches, where it talks about going to a judge who is unworthy. So he says, if you go to a court with a judge who you don't consider to be worthy, that's siman Ches. That's not siman Chavav. That's not non-Jewish courts. Non-Jewish courts, in his mind, means courts that the non-Jews set up with their system of law, which is separate from our system of law. He believed that this is not an issue for the Israeli courts, and he quoted quite a few sources that he felt supported his position. But in any case, going back to our issue, we've now framed the prohibition. We've talked about three reasons for the prohibition, and now I want to come back to that Rashbah, who said that the issue is that our Choshen Mishpat, all of the mesechtas and all of the discussion is going to atrophy if it's not applied in a practical way. So Justice Elon says the Rashba's concern played out historically. When we had the ability to handle our own cases, when we lived in societies where the government turned to the Jewish community and said, you guys handle your own affairs. Just we ask you for two things. Keep the peace. Well, three things. Keep the peace, don't kill anybody, and pay taxes. as far as that, you know, that, those are the limits of your obligations. The, as long as the government did that, then Choshen Mishpat flourished. It meant that the Dayanim had to learn it in a practical way. Not in an abstract way, theoretical way, but in a what are real people going to do when they're confronted with this law kind of way. And they dealt with new issues as they came up, because new things always come up. It's not as though you can just say, I learned about an ox goring somebody else's ox, or I learned the Gemara about fair competition in Bava Basra, and now I know everything. There are always going to be new issues that come up through the ages. In this way, Choshen Mishpat remains alive and evolving. And we ran into trouble due to two historical factors. One is that there were periods of time when the courts lacked the ability to compel people to come to Beis Din or to listen to verdicts. The social fabric of the community was weak, because at the end of the day, the Beis Din didn't have any weapons. Their only weapon was excommunication. And excommunication only works if the community says, we actually are interested in following through. If the community says, we don't want to ban this guy, we don't think it's worthwhile, he's entrenched in the community, or we're just not so interested in following the Beis Din, then that's it, it evaporates. That was one factor. The other factor is that there were periods, two in particular that he highlights, when the government insisted that we had to use their courts. One, the Roman period right after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, and the other, the European emancipation, right, post-Napoleon, end of the 18th century into the beginning of the 19th century, because you have to remember the way emancipation worked, right? The way emancipation worked was it was a double-edged sword. We will free you so that you can now attend universities, you can hold various jobs, you can mingle in society, you don't have to live in particular areas, but you also have to dissolve your communal institutions, and now you're part of broader society. You don't have your own courts, you don't have your own tax structure, you don't have your own way of running your community. And it takes a while, and piecemeal, that all those structures fall apart, but as they do, so people now are going to go to the secular courts. Many of the lands, they said you have to, you don't have a choice. So what you find over the course of time is repeated problems and attempts by the leaders to steer people back to Beis Din. So, for example, take a look at source number 11 on your sheet. A decree from the Beis Din of Rabbeinu Tam, where he writes, and this is just a piece of it, it's recorded by the Maharam Rutenberg, V'nimneinu v'gazarnu v'nidinu v'hecharamnu al kol ish v'isha krovim urechokim asher yavias chavera b'dine goyim, parentheses, ovdei avodah zara, o yechufenu al yidei goyim, ovdei avodah zara, hein sar, hein hedyot, hein moshel, hein stradyot, im lo midas shnehem u'befnei edim ksherim. We voted, we decreed, we excommunicated, and we banned any man or woman, near or far, who brings another, meaning another Jew, to based in or to courts of the non-Jews. The parentheses idolaters is because, again, you were satisfying the censors by writing idolaters in earlier editions. And the end of it, where he says, unless they both agree, seems to also be some kind of a sop for the censor to say, well, if they both want, then they can go, we won't stop them. It doesn't appear to be a disagreement with Ramban's position.
Sorry? Technically, it should be worse.
You mean
the fact that they both agree is a bigger Chil Hashem?
It's a bigger Chil Hashem, but yeah, you can get into a lot of trouble for. Yeah. But that's the that's one example. That's 12th century. Fast forward to the 16th century, and somebody who was really unhappy, Rabbi Binyamin ben Matityahu, author of the Tshuvos Binyamin Ze'ev, is writing in Greece about a community called Arta in Greece. And he describes what they did in this tshuva. He says, Amarti, I said, B'makom kazeh lo yafa hashtika. I can't be silent in a situation like this. Mimasher ra'isi va'oznai shamu, he says, and what I saw, my ears heard, mikesher shal rishayim shisha anashim, avos malacha chutz mitoldoseihen. He's being very flowery here. He says, but six men who were the leaders of this initiative, along with whoever joined them, nis'asu v'holchu etzel shofet ha'ir, they went to the city judge, the municipal judge, not Jewish, and they got him to issue an order, that no longer will a rabbi be allowed to judge by Torah law. Nothing. financial law, marriage, divorce, doesn't make a difference. In lo birshus hashofet, other than with permission by the judge. And he responds, and I brought you just the beginning of his response to this. Ha'im ein shoftim b'Yisrael, are there no judges in Israel? Madua risha yameinu misnasim aleches achashriros libam ara. Why are they following their evil whims, and so on and so forth. He's very, very angry. In the 19th century, also, I didn't bring it on here, Rav Meir Damplatsky in the Klichemda, in Austria, rails against Jews who make agreements with each other to go to secular court. The fact that you have these things happening testifies to the fact that the issue is not a new issue, and that here and there within Jewish history, whether it was because it was a period when we had difficulty because of the social fabric falling apart, think the era that Rabbi Tam is dealing with in the time of the Crusades, or whether you're talking about because of emancipation, and that changes all the rules, and that's what Rav Plotsky in Austria in the 19th century was talking about. You find that people stop going to Beis Din, and there's this attempt to bring them back because what they're doing is seen as a threat to the very evolution of the base of Beis Din. And what you find here, in addition to railing against people and saying, well, don't do that, what you also find very interestingly, Judge Alon emphasizes, is compromise. What's Zabla? What is Zabla? Anyone heard the term Zabla? It's good if you haven't. Zeh Borah Lo Echad. Two parties want to go to some kind of a Din Torah. They don't go to the local Beis Din. Instead, they say, you know what? You choose a judge. I'll choose a judge. A third judge will be selected, whether it's by them or by their two judges. It's its own discussion. And they'll hear the case. That shouldn't exist. But the Gemara recognizes that as a valid method of Beis Din. It shouldn't exist, because classically the way Beis Din worked was you had smuchen, you had people who were ordained. And smicha was not what it is today. You passed a bunch of tests, you did shimush, whatever it was, and we check off the boxes and give you a piece of parchment. Smicha then was like filling a bench today on a circuit, meaning that there were a certain number of seats. There's a vacancy on a court. We'll ordain somebody, and they'll be the spot. It wasn't just we give everybody smicha. So you should have gone to the local court. Why in the world did they allow zeh bar lo echad, that each one could choose? Or the idea which we referenced earlier that you could pick whoever you want and say, you know, we accept this person as a judge. We could take three shepherds and make them our Beis Din, and that's fine. Doesn't mean shepherds in the Torah do very well. They tend to be wise and good and fine. But the idea that you can pick anybody for it, in the Gemara's time, they seem to be viewed as examples of ignorance or even dishonesty. But the fact that these are options, according to Elon, I think he's right, is because you're dealing with an era, first century, second century, particularly after the Bar Kokhba revolt, when the Romans are cracking down on Beis Din. And people are more apt to go to the civil court rather than have problems. And they're trying to protect it by saying, you know what, we'll create other institutions. There will be other ways that you can succeed in pursuing a Din Torah. And here, it's almost like the courts in Ontario have now created all sorts, it's not the courts, the government has created all sorts of alternatives to going to civil courts. They have arbitration panels, they have different systems that are tribunals that are set up. In that case, largely because the dockets are full and they don't know what to do. But here what we're talking about is the opposite. Our dockets weren't full, our dockets were empty. People weren't going to Beis Din, and so there was a need to create more options for them. And that brings us to number 13, which is what I mentioned to you about Toledo, Spain. The Rashba is asked the following question. Hodieni, tell me. Masha amru kolamamid dayim sheno hagun kilu notea ashera. The Gemara says you appoint a judge who's improper. It's like planting an asherah, a tree which is involved with idolatry. So, ketzad nasa ba'yaros shein sham bishe yodea filo ozacha. So what do we do when we have cities where there's nobody who knows a single letter of Torah? V'netzvich mahamid la'amidam lidon ulefashir al-karchon shabal davar. And we need to appoint them to judge and arbitrate against the will of a litigant. This person has to have power and authority. V'imlo namid, if we're not going to set someone up, you know what's going to happen. They're going to go to the non-Jewish courts. And the Rashba writes in his tshuva, yeah, that's what you do. You have to appoint people who aren't learned. Better that than the secular court, and the Rama brings it in Choshem Mishpachas. So what we've seen are three reasons why we avoid the secular court. The Chil Hashem issue, the patriotism, and patriotism sounds a little bit glib for it, but that's essentially what it comes down to. And the argument that it's that din is a religious pursuit. We show that historically, in fact, when there was a fear that people would not go to a din Torah, then they tried to open up other options, or they railed against what people were doing when they stepped away. And the last bit that I was going to mention, I thought I had it in my notes, but I didn't bring it here, but I'll mention it anyway, is something that Justice Alon notes. In the period of the emancipation, once secular courts enter the vogue, because the government says you have to go to secular court, you find a very interesting split between the books of Psak of Ashkenazim and the books of Psak of Sephardim. Starting in the early 19th century and working your way forward, you find, until really you get to North America in the middle of the 20th century, you find that the Ashkenazi books of Psak focus much more on Orach Chaim, much more on Yerideya, and the discussions that you find, the Chosh and Mishpat, are much more theoretical. How do I resolve? There's this sugya here, there's this sugya here, and I have to figure out how to understand the different sugyos. As opposed to the Sfaradi Piskei Halacha, which tend to be much more on point and much more practical. Because in the Sfaradi community, they're still going to Beis Din. Sfaradi community meaning North Africa, meaning Morocco, Tunisia, places like that, they're still litigating in those courts, in the Beis Din. Whereas the Ashkenazi Batei Din have very little to do. And so it's not really dealt with. The poskim aren't being asked. They're asked about chickens all the time. But they're not being asked about to the same extent. There are still, I shouldn't overstate it. You will still find practical psak in Ashkenazi Sfarim of those times, but not nearly to the same extent that you see it among the Sfaradim, and not nearly to the extent that you see it 100 years earlier among the Ashkenazim. It's just not the same. Or 100 years later, because once you get to North America, in the middle of the 20th century, you start to see a rise again in these Piskei Halacha, and of course in Israel you see it as well, where you have a based in a system that's quite alive. Okay, so what if you're stuck? It's all well and good. We've played this out and said that you should be going to Beis Din. We gave reasons to go to Beis Din. We talked about the historical impact of not going to Beis Din. But at the end of the day, what if the person you're litigating with doesn't want to go to Beis Din? Perhaps he feels it's corrupt. Perhaps he feels, I'm not going to get a fair shake, because all the rabbis on the Batei Din in my city, which is anonymous, all the rabbis on my Beis Din are all shul rabbis, and they know everybody, and they're related to everybody, and I can't possibly get a fair hearing. So now, what's supposed to, as hypothetical? So what exactly is, what's supposed to happen? So there is something called a heter erkaot. Heter erkaos. A leniency to allow you to go to erkaos, to the non-Jewish courts. Where does it come from? It originates in the 9th century with Rav Paltiel Gaon. The Rush quotes his tshuva. I've only found it in the text that the Rush uses. It's in the Otzer Gaon and Bava Kamma, but they're quoting the Rush. They're not quoting Rav Paltiel Gaon. So his original text, like that with many texts of the Gaon, and maybe it's buried in the Cairo Geniza somewhere. But in number 14, you see what the Rush says. He quotes you a Gemara in Bava Kamma, which is one of two foundations for the idea of the Heter Erkaos. There are two foundations. This is one of them. The Gemara in Bava Kamma, Tzadi Beis and Midbeis, says, Menachach milsa da amri inchi, karis lechavrach velo anyach, rami guda vishade ilave. What's the source for the thing that people say that if you summon your friend, meaning to Beis Din, and he doesn't answer you, you can knock down the wall on top of him? Dichsiv, it's a pasuk in Yechezkel. Tiarticha velo tiharta mitumaseich, lo titari od. I purified you. You weren't purified. I tried. No longer will you be purified again. In other words, you have to make a good faith attempt. You try to be mitahir. It doesn't work. Okay. So I'll go a different route. That's the Gemara in Bava Kamma Tzadi Beis. And on that basis, Mikan Pasak Rav Paltai Zal, Reuven Sheyesh Lo Tevia Al Shimon. If Reuven has a claim against Shimon, Umisarev Lavo Imo Ledin, he doesn't want to go to court with him, meaning Shimon is refusing. So he's allowed to take him to secular court in order to get his money from this fellow. You don't have to lose your money because this guy is refusing to go to a Beis Din. That's one source for the idea. Ramban thought that that was ridiculous. Ramban said, I don't know what you're talking about, but then he offers a second source for his out instead. I brought you his source in number 16. First, let's look at 16 and then come back to 15. I saw Gemara also in Bava Kama. Hahuka Gusa debate tray. There's a body of water, well, whatever it is, that's shared by two people who both draw on it. To call Yoma have a dali chad minayu. Each day, one of them draws water. So my day is Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday. Your day is Monday, Wednesday, Friday. However, asa chad kadali biyoma dala delay. One day it was my day, and the other guy starts drawing water. What do I do? Amrle yoma didiu. I said it's my day. Lo ashkechbe. Guy's not listening. Shako panda demara machye. So what I did was I took the shovel handle and hit him on the head. And then the case comes to Beis Din, right? And they say, well, you know, he hit me on the head. So I'm like, mea pandi be panda limchi limchiye. He says, that's okay, you can hit him 100 times. Even within the view that you're not allowed to be a vigilante, you're not allowed to just carry out justice on your own. Say so. The makom pseida. To prevent loss, you're allowed to carry out justice. The guy is taking something from me, and if I try to go get an injunction, then I'm going to lose money, and I can't retrieve it, right? If he takes the water, that's it. My field's going dry today. I'm out of luck. Then I'm allowed to do what I need to do to stop him. I am not recommending physical violence, just to make this clear. But the shovel got to work out that day. So Ramban, on that basis, in source number 15, says the following. He says, Heter ze eini yodea, ga'onim halalo eini makir. He says, this Heter that you've said, that was in the rush, in number 14, that you can go to secular court if you tried to get him to a Jewish court and it didn't work, he says, I don't know who these ga'onim are, I don't know what you're talking about, which you can say if you're the Ramban. Avo, but he says, Lova Ilev Shalarata Lavala based in Usur Lahaviol if Negoyim Lidon. He says, if you have some debtor who's powerful and he doesn't want to come to Basin, you can't bring him to a non Jewish court. El Basin Shal Yisrael, Kosvina Drafta al Mechasim. No, this is what you do. The Basin writes a document letting you collect from his property. Vim Hutzrach Lakach Lidon if Negoyim, and if you need to go to secular court in order to get his property from him, then you do that. Hey, Moridinoso, they'll bring you into his property. Lamashadunalo Dayana Yisrael to collect what the Jewish judge has already said was fine. Mutter, that's okay. And then he goes on to explain, and he quotes our Gemara about hitting the guy with the shovel. He says, that you're allowed to do. So there's a fundamental difference between the approach of Rav Paltigon and the approach of the Ramban. The first approach says, you try to bring him to a Beis Din, it doesn't work, go to a non-Jewish court. Ramban's approach is different. Ramban's approach is to say, once the Jewish court has actually said that it's okay, that you're in the right, then you can go to a non-Jewish court for help in collecting, and they're going to go through the motions.
What they're going to rule, though.
Nope, you do not know what they you do not know what they're going
to
rule.
You can't have a petition to enforce the Lashem.
What do you mean?
Because you're bringing a, like you're showing that the Jews can't settle themselves, and they need to get us involved.
I guess what he's saying is we can't expect people to suffer a loss in order to protect the honor of Hashem. You can't expect everybody to lose. You'll create a hefker situation.
You're going to redo the trial again? I understand what you're saying.
You're going to go to the Jewish court. The Dayan is going to review your
case. Because you're right, you can now litigate.
Is that what you're saying? In a secular court, correct.
How do you get the Beis Din to decide if
the other guy isn't there.
Correct.
So, right, we have a general rule, which is that you're not allowed to present testimony without the other fellow there and so on. However, we have precedent for ignoring that rule where you've made a good faith attempt or there's important justification for not having the other fellow there. So, for example, I think it's the Rashba who has a tshuva. Yeah, please take food. Seriously. The Rashba has a tshuva in a case where there are witnesses But the fellow they're going to testify against is an intimidating guy, and they can't testify in front of him. They're too scared. So he says, okay, so in that case, have them testify without the litigant present. We don't like it, but if that's the only way you can get testimony, testimony is very important, and therefore we're willing to do it.
Or is the Beis Din going to tell you, yeah, you know what, you can go non-Jewish court because of your situation.
Is that what that's the difference. Rav Paltigon is saying what you're saying. Rav Paltigon is saying you made your best attempt, now go to the secular court. You tried. The Ramban is saying no, all you're doing in the secular court is hitting the guy with a shovel. The shovel is the secular court. Right, except that they're not going to enforce it without rehearing the case.
Okay.
So you're going to go to them and rehear.
There's a possibility they won't enforce it at all.
Yeah, that's in economy, you can lose. You can lose.
How does this work with what we quoted right at the beginning of the Rambam? Can we say from the beginning of the Rambam that if the guy doesn't want to come to court,
yeah,
that would be your excuse to go to the record to send court?
Rambam is after this. Rambam is following Rav Paltigon. Yeah, he's taking the view of Rav Paltigon.
Right.
That's correct.
I don't know if he brings a source on Halacha, but it's
the Rambam never brings a source.
Right.
He doesn't need to bring sources. He's the Rambam. That's just the way he looked at the world. Rambam is in line with Rav Paltigon, absolutely. The Rav Plotsky, who I mentioned before, in his Klei Chemda, asks the question of, but you just told me there's a losase. You're not allowed to go to secular court. What do you mean? And you're not allowed to say, I mean, this is part of your question, you're not allowed to say, I need to save my money and therefore I can violate a losase. That's not normally allowed.
Sorry, it's a losase
to Midrabanan? Del Raisa. It's taken as a Del Raisa from Vela Mishpat Hamishpatim or Shetasim Fnehem.
It's not just an asmata, because it has nothing to do with
Maybe. Maybe, but even if it were, even if I were to read it as an asmata, it's a lav Derabanan. So you can say, but Makum, say, you know, Hafsid Gadol, or maybe you can make an argument like that, but I think they view it as a Del Raisa. I don't remember offhand whether the Sefer HaChinuch lists it in the 613. I don't remember offhand. Rav Simcha Krauss wrote an article in the Journal of Contemporary Halacha, in which he claimed that by going to the Beis Din first, you demonstrate that you support Din Torah, and therefore the Isser will no longer apply. You show that you believe in Din Torah.
That's only
on
the Chol Hashem.
Yeah. No. If it was a Chol Hashem argument, then who cares that you support it? Right.
If it works, they won't forget.
Exactly. Maybe, because you went.
You did your thing.
So in practice, what does this look like? And it's getting a little bit late, so I'm going to move a little bit faster with it. But in practice, first of all, this is brought l'halacha. We saw it already in the Rambam. In the beginning, the Shulchan Aruch brings the Heter Akos in Choshen Mishpat Chavav Beis. The Ramah discussed it further in Chavav Dalet. There is a view that says that permission is not always needed. The Knesset HaGedola, which I brought you here in number 17, says permission is only needed in particular cases. And he gives you two that he says you need it. Number one, if you're doing more than reclaiming your own property. Mm-hmm. In other words, if he took my stuff, I really could just walk into his property and take it back and then tell him, you don't like it, go to Beis Din. So therefore, I'm allowed to go to secular court in order to do it. I don't need to go to a Beis Din. It's only if I'm getting property that isn't what was physical property that was mine. The other is, he says, actually he has three. He says, in the event that the refusal of the other party is unclear, meaning you summon him to Beis Din, and he refuses, it's very clear that he's refusing. But if it's not so, and in that case you'd be allowed to go to the secular, to the secular court. But otherwise, if I'm not so sure that he's refusing, maybe there's some other factor involved, then I don't have the right. And then he also mentions political concerns. He says sometimes there are political concerns that weigh in. As he put it here, I wrote it on the sheet as, lest this action cause a problem. Shema yavo adavar li day takala. Then there may be certain factors. But the tendency in Pesach is not to follow the Knesset HaGedola. The tendency in Pesach is to say you need a Heter Akos. So how does somebody get a Heter Akos? What do they have to do? So most poskim prefer to follow Ramban's approach, and to say you actually need a decision of the Beis Din. And they have to have warnings, and they have to have summonses, and the whole bit. And this is already seen back in the... actually, I'm sorry, this isn't necessarily Ramban. What this is saying is that it's simply that you need a formal decision to permit him to go. Not that you require that they hear the case, sorry. This is already seen back in the period of Rav Shri Ragon. In source number 18, the Beis Yosef quotes it. Where somebody has been found liable for a debt or charge. So here, in this particular case, the Beis Din has heard the story. And they can't get it from him. And you have, doar here does not mean the mail service. It's an official, an office of the non-Jews. And they're known to be honest. They don't take bribes. Mekabel edus miYisrael al chaveiro, and they'll accept testimony from one Jew about another. So he says, Yesh Rishus Lizkeinim v'tamidim sheyelchu lifnei ha'shofet v'yaidim shezeh chayev lazeh. You can go to the secular court and you can do this testifying in front of them. Mitzvah la'asos kein da'afilu nigzal goy v'gazlan Yisrael edim miyidim etz la'shofet she'enu chomeis v'shofto. He says, even if it were a Jew who had stolen from a non-Jew, you could testify in front of him. And there's no issue. If it's an honest judge, the whole Masira and all that is not relevant. And he says, "V'chol hamorid b'din." And if somebody rebels against the litigating this in a Jewish court, in a Beis Din, "Masrim botchila hasram meforsemes." You give him a public warning. V'meino mekabel. If he doesn't accept it, me'iden all of the govin mimenu b'dinei goyim. Then you testify and you collect in non-Jewish courts. Uminik shalanu la'akiv shlosha pa'amim b'beis hakneses ve'achkach matirim lo. Our minhag is to make this announcement three times in shul. So Rashi Ragon says you need a formal decision by the Beis Din. And I'll do the rest outside of the sources, but you see the sources there on the page. The who can issue such a heter? So the Radbaz said it has to be the city's formal Beis Din. You have to go to the official Beis Din of the city. However, the Maharsham said it could be the shul rabbi. That's his statement. He says, we have a principle in general that when the community hires a rabbi, it isn't just so that he can tell them this is kosher or treif, or this is the time for davening maariv, or whatever it is. But he is now the authority for all communal matters, which includes this, and therefore he can do it alone. You don't need to go to a Beis Din. You go to him, and he will give you a license. It is generally assumed that the misarev, the person is refusing to go, has to refuse three invitations to Beis Din, like what you saw in the Beis Yosef quoting Rashi Ragon. Some do require, like Ramban, that the Beis Din actually evaluate the merits of the claim before issuing the permit. The Nesivos writes that Nekosha Mishpat Chavav, and that makes sense within the view of the Ramban. The Aruch HaShulchan has a little bit more of a nuanced position. Let's take a look at it. It's worth it. I'll read it in the English for the interest of time, but you can see both. He says, if a litigant is powerful, and the Beis Din can't force him to come to Beis Din, so the other party is obligated to warn him first in front of the Beis Din. When it becomes clear to the Beis Din that he's not going, then you could take the court's permission and save your property in secular court. However, this is only where the court knows that the refusing party owes him by Torah law.
The court being the non-Jewish court.
No, the Beis Din knows. Okay. Sorry. That the refusing party owes him, so they have to analyze the case, such as where he has a document. Where it's not clear to him that he owes, they do not give him permission to litigate there, lest that court take his money illegally. Rather, they permit him to work with the non-Jewish court to compel the litigant to come to the Jewish court. You go to the secular Beis Din and get him to come to Beis Din. I don't know what was going on in Novarduk 100 years ago, but that's what he thinks is going to happen. Okay? Well, he cannot do this. If that's not working, so your Beis Din has not heard the case and decided things already. They decided that you're right. You're not able to use the secular court to get him to come to Beis Din. So in that case where he can't do this, and the case is not clear to the Jewish court, then the Jewish court may hear claims from the plaintiff as well as testimony and clarify as best they can according to what they see. If it appears to them that the refusing party owes the plaintiff, then although one cannot know with full clarity from one side's argument, still, since the refusing party does not wish to respond before the court, as he has done, so shall be done to him, lest a sinner be rewarded. In other words, you can judge in absentia. That's what the Aruch HaShulchan is willing to allow, and then you can pursue it in secular courts. The truth is, it really does come down to Ramban in the end. It really still is. I thought when I first read it, I thought not, but I think he's really fundamentally supporting Ramban. He's just taking more words to say it. A couple of notes that are beyond the scope of the general shiur, but worth knowing. Number one, if you're dealing with an in rem proceeding, then you can go to a secular court. In rem proceeding means where you're not litigating anything, but there's some kind of a formality that the court has to execute. So the classic example is bankruptcy. Someone wants to file a bankruptcy, so he's allowed to go to secular court in order to file bankruptcy, even though he's a Jew and he has Jewish creditors, because the court isn't litigating anything. The court is simply carrying out the formal bankruptcy proceeding, and they're going to arrange for some kind of an agreement and so on, but it tends to be assumed that's fine. That's number one. Number two, if someone is sued in a secular court, in other words, there's a Jew who's litigating with me, but I'm the defendant, and he took me to a secular court, so it's fine for me to say, well, I'd like to go to Beis Din, but where he's not listening, you go to a secular court. You don't say, well, I can't go to secular courts, and therefore I refuse to show up. You still go, and there are numerous tshuvos to that effect. Finally, what about a non-Jewish arbitrator who is not using a particular legal system? What about going to general arbitration? So the Chazon Ish that we saw earlier, who did not like setting up a system of law, would be fine with this. If the guy's just going to do it based on his own seichel and say, this is what I think, this is human ethics, he'll be fine with it. Michael Broyd in The Pursuit of Justice in Jewish Law also is fine with that idea. And there is even a shach in Choshen Mishpat Chavez who seems to be fine also with accepting a non-Jewish judge as as an arbitrator. So we've seen three different arguments for why we want people to go to Beis Din, whether it's the honor of Hashem, whether it's keeping our legal system as a living thing, or whether it's the religious character of justice. We said, though, that in practice there is such a thing as a heter akos, which has two foundations. Either the foundation is the Gemara saying, do what it takes to save your property, that's Rav Palti Gon, or the position of Ramban, that you're just taking your own property back and you're using the non-Jewish court as your shovel to hit the guy over the head. The nafkamina, the very important practical difference is whether you have to actually go to Beis Din and have them say you're in the right before you can do this, or whether it's sufficient to go to the Beis Din and have them summon the guy. When he refuses once, twice, three times, then you can go to the secular court. In practice, I think in general, we assume that it's best to satisfy Ramban's point of view and have the Beis Din actually hear you, hear your case, assuming you can get a Beis Din together. and then you would, as needed, go to the secular court. It's now an hour, so if people have to leave, I'm not insulted, but I'll be glad to discuss questions as I am turning off the recorder.